Reading FC put together a mixed bag of results from a week against the lower mid-table. Birmingham secured a worrying 2-1 win at the Mad Stag before Veljko Panovic's side bounced back with a late victory at QPR. Welcome to the Tarlas Den podcast, episode 244 with your host, Mark Mayer, the penultimate show of 2020. Maybe certain reasons why we'd be happy for that. Certain reasons why maybe 2020's actually not been the worst thing for Reading FC. Joining me to talk about whether Reading FC are the real deal is a man who is certainly the real deal himself, the Tarlas Den's Ollie Allen. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thanks, Mark. It's a very kind introduction indeed. But yeah, I'm very, very happy at the moment. 1-0 win yesterday. Put the Christmas tree up this afternoon. So feeling very Christmassy indeed.
Absolutely. There's that one of my favourite chants is the jingle bells, jingle bells. Isn't it fun to see Reading win away, which certainly fans would have been singing had they been at the Loftus Road or Kian Prince Foundation Stadium, I should say. And the fans that were there weren't very happy about it. They certainly weren't singing anything. One of the things I did see that was a fan, I think this is on the Tarlas Den, and a few other people have picked this out on Twitter, the fan who threw his hat down after the goal, if you have the behind the goal camera, which you should all go and check about. So we'll talk about the win at QPR in just a bit. Before we do that, we'll give a big shout out, as always, to our ZCZ Films, our sponsors, who continue to show us support, and we're happy to do that in turn. And a fantastic media company who, if you're in that business, in that industry, do give them a bell for all your needs. And the Patreon subscribers, as always, a big thank you to those guys who put their hand in their pocket for the Tarlas Den's cause. And, well, let's get into it then. The recap of a defeat and a win for Reading FC.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, Birmingham, let's get it done first then, Ollie. And this, it's a difficult game to work out, this one. Birmingham aren't a team that any of us probably really think are that good, let's face it. But, you know, they came to the Mad Stag, and it's one of those games, you know, if Reading would have, sometimes when Reading turn teams over, if we win 3-0 at home or something, we have to say, were we good or were they bad? And the question asks the other way around this time, were Reading particularly bad in this game? Or were Birmingham actually relatively quite decent?
I think it was a bit of both, really. I think it was an off day for Reading, which was probably coming. I think when you look at the side that was put out, you know, Panovic made no changes, I think, from the win over Forest the previous weekend. So, you know, we don't tend to make that many changes at the moment because the squad is so small and it is so depleted with injuries. You know, you look at the bench every week and it's full of academy players. I think yesterday against QPR, I think 8 out of the 9 were academy players. So it's tough when you're playing the same team every week. And, you know, with this hectic championship schedule, you know, you're probably due an off day. And, you know, a lot of the players you could see looked very tired against Birmingham, you know, very slow, very lethargic on the ball. And sort of no real complaints, really, when Birmingham went 2-0 up at half time. You know, what I would say is, you know, there were two very good goals from Jon Terrell and Reading probably got a bit unlucky with that, but I don't think Terrell scored since in the championship since about 2018. So for him to score two, you know, very well taken goals outside the box, you know, always going to come against Reading. But yeah, no real complaints with the result. We were slightly better in the second half, and obviously missing the penalty as well is a, you know, big missed opportunity, really, because, you know, especially with Birmingham then going down to 10 men, you would hope that Reading might be able to pull back and get an equaliser. But yeah, just one of those games that is just one to forget and one to chalk off.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? With Yakimete getting the goal to take it back to 2-1, there was obviously with the fans, there's a lot of anticipation that Reading would do it. And the sending off was quite harsh because I think the penalty was a penalty, in my opinion. But at the time, certainly the first yellow card, I didn't see a yellow card in it. It didn't really look like a foul to me. But obviously, Reading, you know, you get these chances. You certainly, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday game the other week, we weren't having those sort of, you know, the penalties and everything given to us. So we had the chance and Lucas Jou missing it. I think probably the thing that disappointed me the most was what happened after that, and that Reading really, I mean, Jou had a chance at the end, which he put wide, but really just wasn't much going on for Reading to turn that into a draw or maybe even a win. And that you know, we're getting into a little bit as to what that means for Reading and if it means anything. But what one thing that Veljko Panovic did during that game was sub Michael Olise after 55 minutes, which was a big statement from the manager when, you know, if we're getting towards January, obviously there's a lot of talk and speculation about Olise. He's perhaps a player that you maybe a manager would want to keep him as happy as possible by playing him as much as possible. But Panovic, he seems to be comfortable with not doing that and then dropping him from the starting lineup for QPR. He's obviously taken a decision with Olise that sometimes he needs a bit of tough love.
Yeah, as you said, I think it's just a case of managing him in the right way. You know, we say it all the time, but it's very easy to forget, based on his talent, that he is only, well, I've said 18 for the last few months. Obviously, he's 19 now, turned 19 yesterday, but he's still an incredibly young player. And of course, at that age, you know, you want to play as much as you can. And Reading have come to rely on Michael Olise this season. But for me, I'm not against what Panovic is doing, because I think you do run the risk of burning Michael Olise out. And to be honest, he didn't have the best game on Wednesday against Birmingham. You know, he was pretty quiet for most of it. You know, when, as I say, you know, when so much is expected of him to sort of create Reading's chances, especially with, you know, someone like John Swift out of the picture at the moment and Ovi Ejaria not having the best game either. There's a lot of pressure on Olise to perform, and he didn't quite do that on Wednesday. And as I say, that's perhaps a result of playing, you know, so often over the last few weeks. And Panovic is doing the right thing by resting him where he can. But yeah, look, I can see his frustration, as I say, because he clearly wants to play a lot. He clearly feels he deserves to play a lot because he is doing so well at the moment. But yeah, it's a tough one. I think especially Reading could have done with him on that pitch. Especially after Birmingham went down to 10 men, you know, you want, you know, to try and, you know, get a point from that game at the very least. You know, to say that Reading played the final 20 minutes with an extra man and didn't really create an awful lot, as you say, that is very disappointing. And perhaps with Olise on the pitch, they might be able to create a bit more. But yeah, just a frustrating game all around, really, I think.
Yeah, and that frustration certainly came to a head, really, and in a good way against QPR. A game, really, that, you know, look at the stats, two shots on target for each team. QPR's game in the first half, Reading's in the second half. In terms of analysis, it's not one that I think you can dig too much into, because ultimately the two teams weren't playing particularly well, both solid enough, and it was a moment of magic which came to break the deadlock. And it was a very different 11, the Panovic pitch, with Yakumeite, Lucas Schau both out, John Swift out as well. We'll get on to exactly what's happening with those guys a bit later. Olise on the bench, let's say Thomas Estevez came back into the lineup. About half an hour in, Omar Richards went off with an injury, so Lewis Gibson came on. But, you know, this is the thing about trying to judge where Reading are. If you say Birmingham's the kind of stodgy midweek affair against a team that were well organised, perhaps a little bit below their actual quality at the moment, in terms of maybe they are a pretty solid mid-table team if that's how they play every week. QPR, again, stodgy sort of team, mid-table. I don't think I'm being rude about them to say that they're not a playoff chasing team this year. And it flips the other way. We go and get the win. And that was excellent to see. And for Michael Olise to produce such a really nice goal at the end, you have to have a lot of confidence to take aim from that range at that moment of the game. Lovely little flick from Tom McIntyre as well to set it up, by the way. But how important was that for Reading then to show that those difficult, tight games, they can pull something out of?
Yeah, it was huge. You know, it was the sort of game that if it had finished 0-0, you probably wouldn't have had many complaints, because there wasn't an awful lot of quality in it. You know, neither side had many clear-cut chances. You know, QPR hit the post with Elias Chair having a sort of similar sort of shot as Olise did. So perhaps a bit of luck on Reading's side there. But yeah, just such a sweet victory. You know, when it comes in the 89th minute and when it comes from someone celebrating their 19th birthday, and as you say, with the quality like that. You know, I said on Wednesday that Olise was quiet against Birmingham, but this was Olise at his brilliant best, really, on Saturday. You know, coming off the bench, perhaps feeling like he had a point to prove, having not started the game, and then producing something of insane quality like that. You know, it's an inch perfect finish, really. And not many other players in Reading's team could probably produce that. And as you say, special mention for Tom McIntyre, who I think probably a lot of people scoffed at when he came on for Sam Baldock, and there were, you know, some eyebrows raised at that substitution. But, you know, he had as big an impact as anybody, you know, with that assist. So yeah, it's a really, really good win. It's a sort of win that you know, gives you confidence that Reading can sort of make the top six this season, because it's the sort of games, you know, we'll talk about Norwich later, that grind out results. And it was really a game yesterday that the Reading ground out that result. They didn't have that many chances, but when it came to it, they had that moment of quality from a player of real, real quality that QPR perhaps didn't have in their side. And when you have someone like Michael Olise who can do stuff like that, it's just a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, it certainly is. With a, you know, having Olise on the pitch who can do that, it is a game changer. And it's for Olise to have added an end product to his game this season, I think there's no doubt he's got enough goals and assists this year. And last year, I don't think he had one assist last year, didn't score any goals, I don't think. But to have done that this year and to add that to his game is really that's the sort of next step that you need. And to look at Obi Ajaria, who's another player, he does need to add that to his game if he wants to be talked about in the same way that we talk about Michael Olise saying. And what I wanted to talk about with this game then, or this week, should I say, with these two games, is that where are you sitting now in terms of Reading being an automatic promotion chasing team or potential a playoff chasing team? Obviously, it's so early in the season. There's still a chance for first. There's still a chance for 21st, quite frankly. So where do you think Reading are in terms of which one's probably the better or the more likely option? Because Reading, you know, they've got the second most wins in the league. Only Norwich have got into double figures for wins. They've got the third highest goal scoring. In terms of goals conceded, it's not great. You know, 4 points off the top. If you take 4 points off, they're eighth rather than fifth. So, you know, do you think that promotion or automatic promotion is still probably where Reading are, or is it more playoffs?
It's tough, isn't it? I think, you know, looking at the table, you have to say that automatic promotion is still, you know, very much achievable. You know, Reading only, what is it, a point, I think, off Bournemouth in second. And,
yeah,
you know, looking at that sort of top bit of the table in general, it's so, so tight. I think, you know, I'm looking at it now, you know, 5 points between Bournemouth in second and Stoke in eighth. And there's no sort of real runaway team, I don't think, this season. You know, Norwich obviously 3 points clear and, as I say, can grind out results. But no team sort of, I don't think is going to run away with it. It's going to be an incredibly tight promotion battle. And, you know, any side that goes on a run of, say, three or four victories in a row, you know, will put themselves into that top two. So it's very much there for the taking for Reading. You know, and we have seen this season, you know, how good this side can be. You know, that fantastic start to the campaign, you know, 7 wins from 8 or whatever it was. You know, and then even after that sort of dip in form, they came back and they beat Bristol City in probably what was probably the best performance of the season so far. But then on the flip side of it, we've seen how they can go on a 5-game winless run. You know, and even the games in the last week or so against Birmingham and QPR, they've not been the best performances from Reading. But as I say, what was satisfying yesterday against QPR was grinding out that result. And that's what good teams do, is that they find a way to win when perhaps they've not been at their best. And Reading are shown they can do that. So, yeah, as I say, with the table as it is at the moment, you know, I see no reason as to why Reading can't get into that top two. Being realistic, yeah, probably playoffs is perhaps where this side is at. You know, especially sort of if the problems with injuries continue, and obviously we don't know how much sort of the loss of Yaku Mate and Lucas Zhao is going to affect Reading. Obviously, we still got the win yesterday, but you know, without Mate and Zhao for the next month or so, it is going to be tough. So I think if Reading can sort of hang in around that top six mark, then there's no reason why they can't do that. The top two, as I say, very much achievable based on the points at the moment. But I think perhaps as we get into the sort of latter part of the season, you know, the teams with more squad depth, with a bit more quality in their side, you know, the likes of Watford, Bournemouth, Brentford are on great form as well. Those teams might start to pull away. But yeah, the playoffs are still very, very much in Reading's reach.
Yeah, I think that squad depth thing is so important for me, that we are going to have to go through a period now of playing Sonny Aluko every week, playing Alpha Smedo every week. It looks like playing Sam Baldock for the next couple of games as well. These aren't players that, if you certainly at the start of the season, you'd have said that's our lineup, we wouldn't not be saying top two. But there's certainly, maybe with that in mind, I'd like to see a bit more of a defensive approach in the next few couple of weeks, particularly the games we've got coming up, as a way of just getting some points on the board. That's something that Reading haven't done this year. They've drawn three games in the Championship. Now, only one team has drawn less games, or fewer games, I should say, than Reading. And that's perhaps something that you'd need to add in to get more towards that automatic promotion. The off days versus mid-table teams, we're seeing it this week. Two games going very differently. And yeah, I think the only other thing that I would say is the kind of reaction to conceding goals that Veljko Panovic talked about after the Birmingham game. He called it a kind of immature disappointment that certain players had, and how he deals with that and how they deal with that will be so important. But, you know, all of those things can obviously change around. You're right to say that the latter stage of the season is when we'll find out, particularly with those teams like Norwich, Bournemouth, Watford obviously have more experience in promotion. Brentford have experience of being in the playoffs. So does Swansea. Cardiff on a decent run at the moment. And this, I suppose the other thing to mention is the January transfer window. A lot can change for Reading then. Good players can come in. We'll talk about that now in mailbag. And before we do that, let's hear from Veljko Panovic himself and what he said after the QPR game.
Especially after we bounced back against the last defeat we suffered at home against Birmingham. So it was a great performance, fantastic spirit, another clean sheet and a great goal. Very happy also for Michael, and that in the day of his birthday, actually, that he scored a great goal and helped the team get a very, very important win in such a difficult place to play against a very good opponent and under a very good atmosphere today.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, so quite a big talking point after the game was Michael Olise's celebration in the mailbag. Windermere Dave saying, why was Olise so miserable both after scoring and at the end? Obviously, the manager is caring about his welfare. Pauline McDonald saying, why don't Ajari and Olise celebrate after scoring? He's still young, looked a bit embarrassed, but what a goal. And Sam Michael saying, what's the deal with Olise not celebrating goals? Is he unhappy, or is it some sort of playing it cool thing that a few of them have decided on? Ovi Ajari did the same when he scored a few weeks back. And I mean, it's a bit of a fun conversation to have, because it means your players are scoring goals, Ollie. And the player that I remember who didn't celebrate, probably the only other player I can remember not celebrating in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, was Nick Blackman. And he stared down the fans after he scored at Derby a few years back. And that was kind of related to the fact that the fans had been on his back. He obviously wasn't happy at the club. That was, you know, that had a backstory which is more understandable. This current one is a bit more confusing, but maybe not as worrying.
Yeah, I'm amazed it's created this much of a furore, really. As you say, you know, it's a good thing that they're scoring, and you know, quite frankly, I couldn't really care less how they celebrate, and you know, as long as it's not offensive, you know, they're at least they're scoring goals. Yeah, it's a strange one. You know, you'd have to ask them, I suppose, to really get to the bottom of it. As I said, I think Olise probably is a bit frustrated with not playing as much as he feels he should, you know, starting on the bench yesterday and feeling he had a point to prove to Panovic. But yeah, we've seen Olise sort of shown his discontent at being subbed off before. You know, I don't want to say he's got an attitude problem or anything like that, but you know, he's clearly young, as I say, wants to play more often, and perhaps that was just a sign of that. But as I say, I'm not too fussed, you know, because at least he's scoring goals, and if he's scoring goals like that most weeks, then you know, I don't really mind how he celebrates.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's 19. Like, if it was a 30-year-old pro who had scored a winner and this was his chance to get into the Premier League after all these years, and he's really grumpy looking about it, then you'd say, oh, that's not very nice. But for a young kid, there is a chance he is doing that, like playing it cool. There is a chance that, You know, he's so determined and so professional that he sees it as merely a step in the road to him achieving his goals and everything, which you'd have to commend, I guess. I think you'd have to ask there ultimately. There's nothing, I've never seen anything in Michael Olise's character that suggests he's kind of moody or anything. His Instagram is pretty what you'd expect of a 19-year-old footballer, seems pretty sound. And Obi Ajaria, I mean, we really don't know much about Obi Ajaria because he doesn't have much social media or anything like that. He doesn't give any interviews. So you just have to kind of, you have to hope that it's just the sign of them being, you know, determined and playing it cool more than anything else. And there's certainly no reason to believe that it is a problem at the moment. Moving on then, Dave saying, given the owners' reluctance to sell their talent, and especially now in the top 10, how do you see the Olise situation playing out in the January and the summer? Well, the summer is obviously TBC because whether Reading go up or not, and how his form lays out in the second half of the season. But for January, I mean, what we have seen, as Dave says, Ollie, is that these owners turned down an offer for Danny Loader after he'd had a medical at Wolves and had 6 months left on his contract. So let's put it kindly and say they're not very easy to deal with for people who want to buy Reading players. So with that in mind, I can't see Michael Olise leaving in January.
Yeah, and you look at the John Swift scenario in the summer as well, where, you know, they were absolutely persistent. They were not going to sell him, you know, despite the fact Nigel Howe came out and said that Reading, you know, would need to sell key players to keep the club afloat, essentially. You know, and they dug their heels in with John Swift. So, yeah, they'll probably do the same in January. I think it would take a pretty significant offer, you know, for them to let Olise go. It probably depends on Olise's own ambitions, probably. You know, there's been a lot of talk in a lot of clubs and a lot of big clubs, you know, supposedly interested in Michael Olise. And if Olise does see himself, you know, at that highest level, which I'm sure he does, and it depends how quickly he wants to get there, you know, does he see himself as, you know, does he want to try and help get Reading promoted and then perhaps leave or give the Premier League a shot with Reading, or does he want to get to the top very, very quickly? You know, if that becomes the case and Olise says, you know, I want to go in January because I'm sure there will be offers for him, that, you know, it might be a case as if might have to let him go, but try and get as much money as they can for him. So, yeah, it's a really tough one. As I say, it's probably a good thing we are talking about it because it shows that Olise is having a fantastic season. But, yeah, I think based off, as you say, the owner's sort of stance, you know, I think we've got another question about sort of their spending habits. But, yeah, I can't see him leaving unless Olise really sort of himself pushes the move.
Well, the other thing I'd say about Olise is this sort of hypothetical scenario, isn't it? Especially as we're chasing promotion. If someone offers 30 million quid to you on January the 2nd, do you take it?
From my personal perspective, yes, I would say, just the fact that Reading do need that money. You know, the FFP scenario still hasn't gone away. You know, there's a lot of talk about it in the summer, and it's sort of, you know, been put to the back burner for a few months now. The season's kicked off, but Reading are still in need of money to sort of balance the books, shall we say. So personally, yes. I think based off other equivalents, I think you look at someone like Eberich Chiesa at QPR last season, who went for, was it about 20 million, I think it was, to Crystal Palace. So
yeah
I think 30 million is probably, I'd probably say that's not too much, but I would probably value Olise around about the same mark as Essay, so around about 20, 25 million. So, yeah, if it was me, yeah, 30 million, I'd let him go.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's the hypothetical sort of football manager stance of sitting there and saying, yes, I think, and I agree, I think £30 million, I think if the club accepted an offer from an ex-Premier League team for £30 million, probably to say, oh, yeah, we'll get 10% of whatever sale, or if they win the Champions League, get another five, I couldn't argue with it. But, you know, I don't run the club. And if you are a man like Dae Jong, who runs a football team, has loads of money, £30 million might not seem like lots of money to him, and wants a Premier League football team, then, you know, he might say, I want a Premier League football team at any cost. It doesn't matter. So he might reject it anyway. We'll wait and see. I think at the moment, I can't imagine a team's going to come in from in January because of the fact that Reading are doing quite well. And also, you know, when teams like Man United, Chelsea, etc. get talked about with these players. They're just scouting. I'm sure that any team worth their salt in the top level of football should be aware of Michael Olise, because he's a good young player at a team that is not in the Premier League, and therefore he is a transfer option. Like, he just is. And it's not rocket science to work that out. And I don't think that's a problem for Reading, and it's not a problem for those clubs to be aware of him. And we'll see how the situation changes. But until the end of the season, I don't think it will. Certainly don't hope it will. Cronesy saying, who on earth is going to be playing up front for the next five league games? Or until the transfer window opens? Sam Baldock clearly isn't the guy. Well, I think, strictly speaking, he is the guy who's going to be playing up front because of Lucas Jou, Yaku Mate, George Puskas all being unavailable. And really, I think that's just going to have to be how it is, Ollie. Sam Baldock is a good footballer at the end of the day. He's not scored in the league yet this season, despite the fact how much he played. Well, he's only started one game and played 177 minutes, so I wouldn't even say that he's had much chance in the league. So I'm not too upset with Sam Baldock playing. I think he works better in other scenarios. He might work better in a two. Maybe we will go to a two if he wants to, you know, shake things up somehow. But ultimately, and between now and Christmas, it's Sam Baldock, and that's just going to be how it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's rather ironic. I think I remember we talking on the podcast pre-season about whether Reading needed another striker, and we sort of said they had not too many, but they had enough as it is. And you know, now we're sitting here with Jou injured, with Puskas injured, and Mato obviously is not really a striker but can't play there, also injured. So, yeah, he's a tough one. You know, Sam Baldock is probably going to have to be the go-to man. He's okay. I wouldn't say Sam Baldock is a striker you want in your team if you are fighting at the top of the Championship. But as you say, you know, until January, that's all we've pretty much got. You know, see, Nahum Melvin Lambert was on the bench yesterday against QPR and being in very good form, I think, for the academy sides so far this season. But Panovic has a sort of reluctance, I think, to play these academy players. But obviously, he's put a lot of them on the bench in recent weeks, but hasn't tended sort of to bring them off the bench. So, yeah, it's a tough one. You know, we've seen, he pushed Alpha Semedo up there yesterday as well, which is a bit of a makeshift option. Tom McIntyre has sort of been thrown up there in the past as well, but I can't see him starting games there. So, yeah, Sam Baldock for now, as long as he is just sort of that stopgap until Jou Mate or Puskas is back, he's not going to score tons of goals. You know, he's got a great work ethic. I'll give him that, and he'll give everything for the team. Sam Baldock, he's not going to not show up for you. It'll always give you 100%, but he's certainly not the same threat that Puskas or Jou has.
No, and one thing I'd say about Baldock as well is obviously injuries permitting. We've got a lot of games. We're playing like Saturday. We're playing Wednesday, Saturday. Then we play the Saturday again, then Tuesday, then Wednesday, Saturday, and then again for the FA Cup. So we've got a lot of games coming up, and what Sam Baldock will do is he will be fit and able to play in all of those games because he's a really good athlete and he can run and run and his work rate's exceptional. So those are things that you can kind of rely on him for. And ultimately, I think that's probably going to be what we have to, you know, it is what we're going to have to rely on for the next few games. You're right about Panovic. He is reluctant to bring on those academy players. Certainly off the bench, he's not, you know, we've seen Tetek, I think, early in the season, but I don't expect him to decide if we are, you know, going into the last 20 minutes against Norwich. I don't expect he'll throw on an academy player because there's no evidence he's done it so far. So I think it is Baldock between now and January. And when it gets to January and we start having players coming back, then they'll reassess and think about the transfer market. And that's what Ben Brenton has tweeted us in, saying, given our current position, will the owners take the risk in January and spend big to give us every chance of finishing in the top two? I think there is a chance of that. Probably more likely to be at the end of the window and potentially more likely to be on loan players, which we have been happy to rely on. There's only a couple more that we can really fit in the squad. But I think there is a chance, Ollie, that they're going to look around and say, yes, let's go for it. Perhaps, yeah, it's almost impossible to do, isn't it, though? Because as soon as you say, yes, we're going for it, all of the clubs bang up their prices.
Yeah, I mean, the January market is notoriously sort of hard to buy players. And as you say, it tends to be towards more the end of the window where you know, players potentially become available, but it's a very hard market to buy players in, because you do only have that month to get, and you know, prices tend to be inflated. And but you know, that said, you know, the owners have shown in the past that they're not afraid to spend big money, that they've clearly got that money behind them. It's just a case of whether sort of the FFP guidelines allow them to do so. And obviously, you know, with Nigel Howell's influence now decreased, is there going to be that person to say, hold on a second, you know, think about sort of the ramifications of this if it doesn't go quite well. But you know, you mentioned it earlier that they are clearly desperate to get to the Premier League no matter what. You know, they see Reading as a Premier League club. They want to win promotion, and we've seen that in the last few years with their spending. It was a bit more restricted in the summer, but they're clearly desperate to get Reading to the Premier League. And you know, they might now see this as a chance with Reading in a good position going into January, that if they add, you know, a few more goals to the team, or if they add you know, another midfielder or a winger or whatever, that might, you know, get Reading up. And you know, we've seen in the past, you know, what an impact January signing is going to have. You know, Jason Roberts, you know, the impact he had in 11-12. So there is basis for it. As I said, that they've clearly got ambition, but it is a tough market to buy players in.
Yeah, and that's what we'll find out in terms of what other clubs in the Championship are pushing for as well, and what clubs in the Premier League have been doing. Because the Premier League, usually you can pick up some decent players who aren't wanted at good Premier League clubs, but I wouldn't say there were loads going around in the summer, and they did actually spend, the Premier League teams were spending quite a bit of money. So there's lots of things to consider, whether there's any chance that the FFP rules are going to be kind of laxened or anything. That doesn't really seem to be discussed at the moment, so probably won't have any impact on January. So we'll have to wait and see, but I think there's a good chance that they'll go ham, but that doesn't mean that it'll happen on January the 2nd. Let's put it that way. So Jack Killick, final question then. If you want to send in your questions to the Tarnlisten Den podcast, we're always very happy to read them out and answer them. The Tarnlisten Den @gmail.com is the email, and obviously the Facebook and the Twitter as well. Jack Killick tweeted us saying, what is the expected return date for Swift, Puskas and Yildirim now that we know other players are out for a while? Well, hold that thought for just one second, because we're going to talk about that now in News Bites.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Okay, let's get the list off and then we'll talk about the specific ramifications of each player. Lucas Schau is estimated at this point about 3 to 4 weeks out. That's a soft tissue injury that he has. Yaku Meite, they're saying not till 2021. And even then, Paunovic says they won't really know until January as to what his injuries have settled down as. Anyone watching the Birmingham game will know in the last minute he kind of had a big old collision with the goalkeeper that he injured his ribs and his knee. So you get an idea of the not niceness of that injury. So it could be a while for him. Omar Richards, a bit of TBC, really. He said Paunovic said he's out for a week at least. He's not expected to feature against Norwich or Brentford. And then they're going to have a look and see if he's able to come back. John Swift, Paunovic, it's difficult to work out with John Swift. Obviously, he's going to reemerge at some point in the next few weeks, whether that's immediately or in the next couple of weeks. I would imagine it's probably going to be a couple of weeks away yet. Yildirim, George Puskas and Felipe Araruna all out, and that's all a good few weeks as well. So potential chance of seeing any of those last three around the Christmas period, but not before then. And well, if I was to pick a selection of players to get injured, Ollie, this is probably a few of those would have featured. And the one that wanted to ask about first was Omar Richards, because we went into the season, everyone knew we only had one left back. Some people thought that Richards wouldn't be good enough. I think he's answered those questions. Now he's not fit for, you know, arguably the biggest week of the season so far. And it's a tricky situation we found ourselves in.
Yeah, I mean, listening to you reel off those players there, it's actually a remarkable number, more than I thought. Yeah, it's not an ideal number to get injured, but I think, to be honest, most teams are sort of dealing with similar issues. I know Norwich have had, you know, very similar or worse injury problems in the last few weeks. So, yeah, it's not something we can complain about too much. On Richards, I think, you know, he's had a fantastic season, probably been one of Reading's better players, you know, so far this campaign. You know, very much made that left back spot his own now. after the departures of Jordan Ibiza and Tyler Black. It had been very, very consistent. You know, for me, Richards has always been very good going forward, but he's really impressed me defensively this season, and sort of been a key contributor to Reading's fairly decent defensive record. So, yeah, but that said, I thought Lewis Gibson was very good when he came on yesterday. You know, not had the game time that he's perhaps expected when he came in on loan, but you know, showed he was very much ready yesterday. You know, obviously didn't have the best of games. Who was it against a couple of weeks ago? We lost 3-0.
Stoke, wasn't it?
Stoke, yeah, that's the one. He had an absolute horror show in that one. But to be fair, I thought he was very, very good yesterday. So yeah, I'm not too worried about him filling in there. Obviously not a natural left back, but you know, based off yesterday's performance, and I've got no qualms with him playing there for the next few games.
Well, it would be that case of not of moving over the centre back to left back, and Lewis Gibson being left footed. I think it fits in well enough. We'll find out against Norwich and Brentford whether it's not good enough, but it fits in well enough in theory for now. And the alternatives, you know, Ethan Bristow, Imari Samuels, the academy left backs are, you know, they're academy left backs at the end of the day. It's a risk playing those players, even if they are, you know, quote unquote, the natural options for that position. The other player, we've spoken about the attack. The other player I wanted to mention then is John Swift. As it seems that they're kind of going day by day, week by week, as to whether he's going to be able to come back. With this injury kind of problems mounting up, given that he can play that central attacking midfield role while having Ajari, Elise, Aluko, etc. alongside him, is there a temptation to kind of push him a bit quicker and rush him back and maybe get him in the starting lineup for Norwich? Or do you think that it's not actually worth that kind of risk?
I think Norwich, I mean, I don't particularly know quite what the situation is with Swift, but I think Norwich would have to be too soon for him. I think, you know, he's not got the best of injury records anyway, so to push a player like him back too soon might be a mistake. But yeah, I think you would see Elise go out wide if Swift was to go back in. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the fact that Elise has had such a good season is that we've not missed John Swift as much. So yeah, it's a tough one, but yeah, I wouldn't rush him back too soon. I think obviously, you know, Semedo and Aluko aren't the answer in that attacking midfield three, but they will do a decent enough job, I think. I think Aluko's had a better season than I probably thought he would have done. He's been all right. I think whenever he's played, he's not been great, but he's done a job, as I say. So, yeah, I'm not sure it's really worth the risk with John Swift, because if you push him back too soon, you might end up, you know, knocking him out for the whole season, and that's the last thing that Reading needs. So, yeah, I would stick with perhaps, you know, sort of that attacking midfield three of maybe Ajaria, Elise, and either Aluko or Semedo for now.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably it does feel, you know, as when you're outside the training ground, there is always that kind of optimistic chance of, oh, maybe they'll just throw him in starting because he's perfectly fit and ready. But yeah, it feels like a little bit unlikely at the moment. Let's round off then the other teams of Reading FC. The women's team, 2-1 defeat to Manchester United on Sunday in front of the fans at the Madstad. They've next got Brighton away on the 20th. Under-23s have got Burnley away on Monday, and the under-18s were knocked out of the FA Youth Cup on Friday night. That was a 4-3 defeat to Aston Villa, and it was a defeat right at the death as well. So really unfortunate for the under-18s. They now host Fulham on Wednesday lunchtime. So Reading senior men's team also have a pretty important game on Wednesday. Let's talk about it now in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
8 p.m. on Wednesday, the 16th of December. It is the top of the table Norwich coming by the Madstad. Not the first time we've had a top of the table team at the Madejski this season. And it is a sellout. Absolutely no difficulty in selling those tickets for the Norwich game. And this is, as a game, Ollie, this is what I'm really not looking forward to. Not because I think Reading's chances are particularly bad, but because Norwich are that team that just keep finding a way to win. And it's almost annoying looking at the games. I remember I was following on Sky Sports News the one Saturday a few weeks ago, and then Rotherham away, and it felt like, you know, Rotherham did everything to make sure they didn't win that game against Norwich, who, you know, eventually took, I think it's quite a late winner in that one. And that's kind of been the theme. They've had a lot of late goals. They've been doing, you know, they've been getting good results. There's no arguments about the quality of the results, but they just keep finding a way to win. They've not had any clean sheets in the last six games, but they are top of the league and, you know, a difficult game awaits.
Yeah, a real test for Reading. You know, it's what we were speaking about earlier, is that it's that finding a way to win. It's that grinding out results that Reading did yesterday, but Norwich have been doing all season pretty much. And it is that sort of test that will perhaps define if Reading are really up to scratch for top two material, or whether we are sort of more a playoff chasing team. But yeah, they're a very, very good side. And, you know, I backed them for promotion at the start of the season, and obviously still stand by that. You know, obviously they had a torrid time in the Premier League last season, but it always kind of felt for me, I think, as if they were pretty much just preparing for another season in the Championship throughout last season. And by the time it got to January, and they were pretty much already relegated, you know, it kind of felt as if they had that plan in place for this season. You know, they didn't really lose anyone in the summer, bar I think Jamal Lewis and Ben Godfrey in defence, but you know, they've recruited pretty well. You know, in Timu Pukki, they've got one of the best strikers in the league. I think he got both of their goals yesterday. And yeah, as you say, you know, they don't necessarily win emphatically, but they grind out results. You know, you mentioned that Rotherham game. I think yesterday they beat Blackburn 2-1 against Nottingham Forest. They went 1-0 up, were pegged back to 1-1, and went back in front almost straight away. And it's been a similar sort of story. And yeah, it's going to be a very, very difficult game for Reading.
Yeah, and you look at the players they have at the moment. As you say, Timu Pukki, the players that started against Blackburn, Brendia, Vrancic, Tetti, Grant Hanley at the back, Max Aarons at right back. These are the players that they're playing with in the Premier League last season. Todd Cantwell came off the bench, as did Stieperman. They certainly expect Cantwell to start if he's fit on Wednesday. And then we've got Brentford away on Saturday, 3 p.m. straight after. And they've 2 points behind us as things stand. Not lost since October the 24th. And looking at these two games together then, Ollie, this is, you have to say, it's the biggest week of Reading season so far.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Not another very, very tough game against Brentford. You know, we all know what they're about. You know, they've been up towards the top end of the Championship for the last few years now, and obviously, you know, very nearly got promoted last season. And again, they're also a side that I backed for promotion at the start of the season. I think I said Norwich, Watford and Brentford. So, you know, the fact we're playing two of those sides now, it's going to be really tough. And, you know, they're banging form. You know, they had a bit of a shaky start to the campaign, and perhaps a bit of a hangover from that playoff final defeat. But as you say now, you know, unbeaten in 11. Another side with a top class striker in Ivan Toney, who's sort of stepped up to the Championship, you know, very, very well, sort of replaced Ollie Watkins for them. And, you know, they've still got a lot of talented players in there as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a really difficult week for Reading. And, you know, not to put a downer on things, it maybe wouldn't be a surprise to see Reading lose both of them. And that's not necessarily anything against Reading. It's the fact that these two sides are, you know, very good sides who will probably be up there coming into the season. So it's going to be a real test of sort of Reading's mettle here. You know, we are going to see now if Reading are up to scratch as automatic promotion chasers. It's not the end of the world if we lose both of them. You know, they still won't be too far off the top six, and we'll definitely drop out of the top six with defeats, but we still won't be too far off it. So yeah, it's going to be a real interesting couple of games, and it will really sort of tell us what Reading are made of.
Yeah, proper litmus test week, isn't it? And Brentford are really annoying, I must say, because they had Neil Morpay and they sell him, and they got Ollie Watkins and he's good, and then they sell him and they got Ivan Toney, and eventually you think, oh, they've got a miss at some point, but they don't, and Toney scores loads of goals and they're good again. And that's just how it goes when a team is obviously very well run and everything, and it can only last so long. You know, teams, we've seen countless teams over the years in the playoffs and in and around the playoffs for a few years, eventually they will either go up or drop away. But Brentford are sustaining it at the moment, which is a big credit to them. And obviously it's our first trip to their new stadium on Saturday. So I think you know, the final point I'd say on this week is that 2 points is fine. 3 points is good. Anything more than that, spectacular. 1 point out of these two games, you depending on the circumstances, you might just stomach it, mightn't you?
Yeah, I think it probably depends on how sort of Reading perform in the two games. And if they get absolutely battered in both games, then you might worry a little bit. But if they sort of put in, you know, decent battling performances against both and ultimately come up short, you know, you sort of shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, you know, look, we're not going to have Lucas Jao, we're not going to have Yaku Mato. So already Reading is sort of at a disadvantage in that respect. So, yeah, I would definitely take one win out of the two. As you say, anything more than that is fantastic. But, just two very, very tough games.
Yeah, final question then before we round off the show, and it's the predictions time. And actually, there's no points in the last week, and so no change in predictions. Four of us predicted wins against Birmingham, didn't happen. Four of us predicted one alls against QBR, didn't happen. So as it is, I'm still in the lead with 14 points. Westy 12, Handbags 11, Sim on 7, Ollie you on 6. So you can have first batter up for the Norwich game.
You know, we've tended to go very similar predictions in the last few weeks, but going first now, I've got no idea what anyone else is going for. So, I'm going to say a defeat just because I think Norwich, as you say, have that habit of grinding out a win, and Reading, you know, with the injury problems that we have, it's going to be tough for us. So, I'm going to say 2-1 to Norwich.
You've taken the prediction out of my mouth, so I'm going to say, in that case, a 2-2 draw, let's say, because if Reading can get a couple goals, I certainly don't think we're going to keep them out. But this is the sort of game Reading could benefit from if, you know, Norwich press up and have a lot of the ball. Reading could counter. You know, you have to trust your faith in a Pavlovic sort of solution to that sort of problem. So I'll go for a 2-2 draw to be a bit different then. And that is the penultimate show of the Tarlhurst End 2020 rounded off, kind of really, because, you know, next week will be the Christmas special. We'll have to find a time when we can all sort that one out, because then we go into the Christmas period. Over the Christmas period, we will have another special show for you, which I'll talk more about next week. And then we'll have a week and a bit off, really, over the Christmas period to give ourselves a breather. It's usually to spend time with families, but I suppose if I say that now, I'll have a fine landed on me if I say it at the wrong period of December. So, yeah, we'll have the Christmas special next week after the Brentford game. And then it will be over into the Christmas period and beyond. So very exciting times ahead for Reading. A lot going on. Ollie, thank you very much for sparing an hour with me on this Sunday evening.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much.
And everyone, thank you very much for listening. Hopefully the Christmas shopping isn't going too stressful. Hopefully the late win on the weekend wasn't too much of a stress waiting for that winning goal to come, but it set us up really nicely for what I just said is the biggest week of the season for Reading FC, at home to the team that's top, away to one of the teams that we know are going to be chasing for the playoffs. And Reading will be finding out in about 7 days' time whether they will be true promotion contenders or just about settling for the playoffs. I think either are pretty decent, let's say that. So until next time, thank you again, and come on, you Arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.